Okay, this is the hour. We'll take your phone calls with Marshall Masters as we talk about Planet X and much more on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Marshall Masters with us. Marshall, tell me what your team did in the extremes they went through to come up with these theories for the Planet X 101 series.
Well, we really just have, we've studied the data. In terms of Turri Alba, we have observations from not one but three different camera systems. What we found out later, interestingly enough, was that Nibiru was visible as early as February 2010. And it was picked up on the first camera system, and then that system was destroyed in an eruption. Turri Alba is a very active volcano. And these surveillance cameras are not for, you know, with other volcanoes, they tend to point to the east so they get the spectacular sunrises. Well, at Turri Alba, this is a very active volcano. It's erupted a few times since we've been, doing the observations. And people who live at the base of that thing want to know when it's time to bust a move. And so these cameras are pointed out to the west, southwest, and to show from, and it's mounted on the eastern rim, pointed towards the western rim of the volcano, which is at about 11,000 feet. The first camera system, we had a lot of images, and that we found those that a Chilean engineer, Rodolfo Escuada, I believe it was his name, had those. But we started monitoring this actually in the beginning of 2013, January 5th, and we have harvested probably close to 800 images of Nibiru from not one but two different camera systems. The third camera system was installed in July of last year after the second camera system was toasted by another eruption. Now, that one was gifted by the United States government. The first two had been installed by a local university. And what happened was, interestingly enough, after we posted this video, Nibiru Nearing, and we document this on our site, there's an article called It's Time to Look Up. Our government responded by having the camera actually pointed down towards the ground. So now the first two-thirds of the foreground are just useless dirt, so that the camera is no longer pointed up enough that we can see the sky, that we can do observations on Nibiru, because this third camera, which was installed by the United States government, the resolution was so awful that, frankly, I think, George, it was probably one of the cameras used to do the Kennedy-Nixon debate.
That destroyed Nixon.
Yeah, it did. And, it just is awful resolution. And when they installed it, they intentionally did a wide zoom with a peculiar tilt. And so, they were sabotaging the view. Now, what I do in Nibiru Nearing is I actually compensate for that using a common referent. And what you see is the reason why we are able to observe, even with this third camera, with its bizarre tilt and its bizarre zoom, that in January of this year we were actually able to reacquire Nibiru, is that Nibiru is nearing. It's bigger now. So, what we're seeing...
And what's going to happen, though, catastrophically, Marshall? What could happen?
Well, I think we're already seeing it, George. I think you look at the increased seismicity, you look at the increased volcanism, the weather weirding, sinkholes. I think we're seeing all these early harbinger signs of this. At what threshold do people finally have to say, I need to take this seriously? What I can say is that just based on what we saw in the data that we did this analysis for Nibiru Nearing, we're fairly convinced that sometime in 2016, Nibiru is going to be naked eye visible all around the globe. Now, are people going to believe their lying eyes? They're going to be standing there out in the street and pointing up, going, hey, Phyllis, look at that. Boy, that's going to leave a mark. And they're going to be, you know, talking. But what's the government going to say? Well, we didn't say anything about it up to now because it's just going to go by harmlessly. It's just going to be an interesting curiosity in the sky. And people are going to go for that. They're going to go for that lie. The smart ones are going to get off the coast. All right?
Not a lot of people, though, Marshall, can just up and leave. You know, they don't have the luxuries that maybe a few other people have.
You know, I understand that. I just recently moved from Santa Cruz area to Reno, Nevada. And I wrote an article. It's on my site. It's Time to Bust a Move. And it was arduous. And I really do, I feel sorry for folks. But, you know, we think it's difficult. But if you really want that new car, you find a way to get the new car. You really want that better job, you get the job training, you find a way to do it. The problem for people getting off the coast is, first off, there's so much deception. But there's also a lot of social programming. And here's what I'm finding is, people who are coming into awareness, and these are people who are having dreams, visions, and premonitions that are so powerful, they know what they know. It doesn't matter how many dead animal skins you got on the wall. You're not going to talk them out of it. The problem is only about one in five of these people are going to be in a marriage where the spouse is also in awareness. Otherwise, they tend to have a situation with a spoiler spouse. And they're seeing this, they're following it, and their spouse is really getting threatened and says, you know, if you don't do, you don't stop doing this, I'm going to divorce you. And what I'm finding is a lot of people who are in awareness, their marriages are folding up. And the interesting thing is they're not the ones making the threat. It's the spoiler spouse who always does that. But nine times out of ten, it is the person in awareness who not only moves, but they're the ones who file for the divorce as well because they just want the peace of mind. And so these people who are having the dreams, visions, and premonitions, they're getting off the coast, all right? It's the people who are in denial that are staying on the coast, and they're not going to move. And there's no way to have a rational conversation. What people have to understand is that, first off, this topic of Planet X provokes one of the deepest fear ingrams in our racial memory, that being things that fall out of the sky and kill a lot of folks. And
yeah,
so
that's true.
That's right. Nobody wants to talk about that. So you immediately have this fear response. That fear response is then going to be expressed through social programming. Social programming, if we're in, you know, you're in North Korea, you know who's doing it. Everyone's in lockstep and the great leader is up there waving. Here, it's the central bankers that are setting the pace and tone. They're the ones who tell the corporations and the corporations tell the governments. And then, you know, it filters down to your own personal network of doctors, shrinks, parents, whoever you turn to for advice. But, and, you know, and it permeates down. But in the final analysis, it's be a good consumer and, you know, rack up credit card debt and, you know, do whatever the central bankers want you to do. Well, this topic runs contrary to what social programming is saying. And social programming is telling the spoiler spouses, you immediately, you have to stop this. Doesn't matter how you stop the behavior, but you have to stop it. And so you can sit there and say, honey, look at my information. Just sit down and look at it with me. No. Why? Because I'm not. It's all stupid. It's not going to happen. I'm not going to look at it. You're not going to look at it. But if you don't stop looking at it, I'm going to divorce you. And so, and people with this social programming reaction, everybody will agree, yeah, social programming exists. But like alcoholics, they'll say, I can control it.
Not everybody can. Let's take some calls here for you, Marshall. They're lining up. We've got Steve in Sydney, Australia to get things going. Hey, Stephen, long way. Go ahead.
Yeah, g'day, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I just want to be talking about my observations from down here. I'm in the southern hemisphere, of course, so I have a pretty good view down towards the south.
Mm-hmm.
And as I understand, I can see all the way below the ecliptic to the south ecliptic pole. I'm just a bit confused about some things, though. Maybe Marshall can help to explain. This planet X has been next to the Sun for some time, and I'm just wondering, George and Marshall, how do you account for the way that the Earth moves around the Sun in its orbit at 1 degree per day? You know, like in 30 days, we've moved 30 degrees around the Sun,
mm-hmm.
and in 6 months' time, we're actually looking back in the opposite direction. So I just can't understand how we can still be looking towards the Sun and seeing this planet X there month after month. How does that work, Marshall?
Well, you have a mini constellation that's orbiting in a spiral around the Sun. It's spiraling around the Sun. We're spiraling around the Sun. And it's on the opposite side right now, and we are slowly merging with it, which is the reason why we're starting to see it.
Are we in the wrong place at the wrong time in terms of being able to see this thing?
No. I mean, it's, you know, we're observing it. We were from Turrialba. Also, we have people that have been submitting other observations of it. So, you know, an interesting way to think about it is imagine a carousel, all right? And we're on one side of the carousel, the Sun is in the center of the carousel, and the Planet X mini system is on the other side of the carousel. So the carousel's moving around, and so we can't see the other horse on the other side unless we start moving and walking forward from one horse to the next. And what's happening is that it's not a perfect situation where we're both going around the Sun in a perfect situation. We are closing with it. It's the reason why we're able to see it. And in 2016, when it comes around, it reaches its point of perihelion. We're definitely going to see it. But, you know, what your caller in Australia is doing is he's making the same mistake that a lot of people do, is they just think, well, it's a planet like all of the other planets in our solar system. We're talking about something we've never seen before, and at least not in modern times. Now,
well, it was 3,600 years ago, right?
That's right, and it was very well documented by the ancient Sumerians. It's also very well documented by the Egyptians in the Colbran Bible. And they explain these behaviors as well. So there's a tremendous amount of history. That's the reason why you have all these different names for this same thing. And so it's Red Planet, it's Herkobolus, it's Frightener, it's Destroyer. It's mentioned in the Bible. You know, one of the things that is interesting, Carlos Muñoz Ferrada, a Chilean astronomer, first began talking about this in 1940. And one of the points he makes is that this object does not follow our established celestial laws, which is based on what we're observing in our system. This thing is it varies in speed in its orbit, so there's just a lot that, you know, it defies what we would come to it with assumptions.
Zechariah Sitchin talked about a collision that this planet or another planet had with planet Earth way before astronomers even conceived of the notion of a collision that helped form the moon, which they're now talking about. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, and you know, the collisions in our pole shift video, we present the Phaeton. Phaeton is this was a planet that they believed was what was destroyed, and as the result of that created the asteroid belt.
Okay, all right.
And so that is actually what we did was in our first, we have three scenarios, flyby scenarios, and the Phaeton is the very first one.
Is that the planet that hit us as well?
I don't know that it's this is the Phaeton theory is just that something happened to Phaeton. I believe the theory that was dealing with Earth was a planet called Tiamat.
You're right.
And
what,
so
whatever
is,
that means,
this is,
right?
Right. This is that it's very old, and it goes back to the creation of the moon. And so objects do slam into each other.
Well, it's interesting that astronomers are calling this object that hit Earth Theia, T-H-E-I-A. So that's pretty close, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, there's, and especially in the last year, we're seeing a lot of interesting things. They just announced that they believe that they have discovered that there's a large body several times the size of Earth way out there, okay, beyond the orbit of Pluto.
Could that be Nibiru?
It raises the question.
They also think now that there is another planet within our planet, inside of it.
It wouldn't surprise me.
That's an amazing. Let's take another call, then the break, then we'll come back with more. Arlene is in Manhattan and now on Coast to Coast. Hi, Arlene. Go ahead.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good.
I heard the guy say something about Nemesis. I want him to just kind of explain it because I got a vision that I just had on the 14th of April. And what is Nemesis?
Nemesis is a brown dwarf. And let me, before I explain it.
Basically a burned out star, right?
It's a failed star. It's a failed star, but I am just really curious. Caller, describe what you saw in your vision.
Yeah, what was the vision?
Okay, good. Listen, on the 14th of April, which was the day after my birthday, I'm laying there over a friend's house sleeping, and in this vision, there was a lady when I was in high school. She was really close to me. She was taking me through this board, like the guy was talking about, that 64 board, like a chessboard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And on this board, as you step, there were different types of wordings on the screen, like a Jeopardy screen, and they would come to your face. And it seemed like she was trying to teach me something. And so as I stepped, these wordings were coming forth. And I'm going to just be very fast here. And so anyway, when they were coming forth, we were reading them, but I just couldn't keep them in mind. They were, when I woke up, they left. But as we were walking, and so there was this guy that came forth from the back of me, and he was asking her things, so she was teaching me stuff. And she spoke to him like telepathically and said, well, you have to just remember it, contain it. So he was looking at the board. He read the book, whatever the board said. He went on. So we walked a little further, and there was other guy sitting like on a throne, and he had this kind of some kind of wiring around his head, I said like that, in twofold, dual, overlapping. And so he was sitting there, and he got mad at her for teaching me things instead of letting me learn them on my own.
Well, what was the big highlight of it, though, Arlene? I'm almost at the break. Go ahead.
The big highlight of it was that the guy at the end, he said, he split himself in half, like into two dual persons. He said, this was virtual reality. And you had a question back a while ago, and you were asking, well, are they here? Are they on this planet? And all that stuff. And back in 2011, Linda Mondale was on, and she had did a show, and she was talking about this probe machine.
Yes. As a matter of fact, she's coming back next week to talk about that again. We'll be back. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, guess what? Friday night into Saturday morning, special guest about paranormal activity throughout the Midwest and the South. And then later on in the show, those special open lines. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Marshall, do you think one government knows about the existence of this planet? And if they do, why aren't they telling us about it?
Yes, they know about it, and the reason why this is being withheld, frankly, is to ensure the greatest possible dieback.
And that
there's not enough resources for 7 billion souls. Not going through a cataclysm. We're already in resource wars. We're already strained. We've exploited the planet so much. And frankly, they just don't want a lot of people moving off the coastlines, and that would cause a lot of havoc. There's just a number of different reasons that makes sense to them.
Is it almost like a wait and see attitude? Let it happen, then we'll worry about it then?
No, I think it's very calculating. You know, if you watch the movie 2012, you get past the eye candy, the director tells you exactly how the elites and the governments are thinking about this and how they react to it. And I'm going to tell you something. It is the way it is. Just watch the movie 2012, get past all the eye candy. But, you know, there's that great line. Wasn't it decided that people have a right to fight for their lives? No. When do you tell them? You tell them after the elites are already where they need to be. They've made, you know, they're in their bunkers, they're safe. That's the reason why I tell folks, hey, once we start seeing corporate jets lining up on the tarmac at Denver International, like a case of the measles.
Yeah, then we got a problem.
Dying time is near.
Well, let's go to Tommy in Knoxville, Tennessee to get us going here. Tommy, go ahead.
Hey, George, I'm a somewhat new listener over the last few months, and tell you, my friend, your show is the best thing I have ever heard. I don't even watch TV anymore.
It's perfect.
Just, it's just, yes, sir. Thank you very much everything that you do. Okay, two things. One, you had an astronomer on a week or so ago talking about the formation of the moon.
Yes.
Okay, that gentleman, I can't remember his name, but he said that all these scientists, top minds all around the world, all understand that the orbits and all the planets and planetoids in the system are known down to about a millimeter or so, if I'm not mistaken. Now, if Planet X and all that other system is a part of our system, wouldn't that have an influence on the orbits of our planets? Would it be a noticeable, detection? And the second thing is the caller from Australia. I wasn't clear on your answer, but I think what he was saying is that the Earth goes all the way around the sun every year, and I think what he's trying to get at is if we do go around the sun completely once every year, then at some point during that year, we're going to clearly be able to see this system. And if not, then that would suggest that that system is orbiting at a speed tens of thousands of times faster than our orbit. And I was just curious of your comments on those two things.
All right.
Thank you very much for your time.
You're very welcome. Marshall, go ahead.
All right. As I explained before, imagine you're on two sides of a carousel. All right. This second caller is making the same false assumption as the first one. And that is, well, it's supposed to behave like a planet that we already know, like a Mars or a Venus or something like that. It doesn't behave that way. All right. And this thing is going around the sun, and it's coming up at the same time. And it's really hard for him to visualize this in his mind because he's going to a static universe model. But that's exactly what's happening. It's a corkscrew. We're corkscrewing. It's corkscrewing. And its corkscrew is, pretty much in lockstep with ours. Not exactly. And we are merging. And that's the reason why when this thing does come around perihelion, it's going to be on our side of the sun, and it's going to hurt. Now, right now, what we're having are the initial signs, and this goes to the first question. This incoming system is interacting with the sun, and we've had, since 1940, increased luminance. And so this is translating into the seismicity and the volcanism that we're seeing. And so, plus the sinkholes and all the other problems. Now, once it gets closer, yes, that is when we're looking at gravitational forces. We call it a lithosphere lurch when it finally locks on as it's coming around and causes the pole shift. So right now what we're getting is secondhand effects from increased solar luminance caused by the interaction between the sun and this object. And that was something we documented years ago with the Ulysses probe, which clearly shows that the southern hemisphere of the sun is much more active than the northern hemisphere. and the sun's activity in the southern hemisphere is reaching out into an area where this system would be coming up from. So this was already, the Ulysses probe did a circumpolar orbit around the sun. And, of course, every time these probes start to really feed the good data, there's always a problem, and NASA can't deliver the rest of it. But there was enough of it that came through. It's on the site. We have an article that documents it. So we already know that the southern hemisphere of the sun is reacting to it, and that in turn is what's causing a lot of the problems we see now. But then eventually when it comes around, we merge with it as, you know, it comes around the other side of the carousel, if you will.
What do you think, Marshall, could be the worst-case scenario with this planet?
The worst-case scenario is that it comes around, it gets a lithosphere lock on the planet, the spin of the planet, and this is something, you know, before when I've been on, I've talked about it, and I didn't feel it was possible, but now we do, we're seeing this as a possibility, is that it could cause the planet to slowly come to a stop and then start spinning the other way once we have a shift, not only magnetically, but in the celestial poles.
Wow.
Where, you know, we could wind up in a pole shift situation where the South Pole is, you know, Cape Town, South Africa. And
if we start shifting and going the other way, I mean, what's that going to do to us?
Well, all the basins, all the waters, you know, the oceans are going to come out of their basins. It's going to be, and you know, it goes right back to Noah and the flood.
It's a catastrophe.
Absolutely.
As you say, biblical proportions.
Biblical proportions. We're talking about, you know, the bulk of humanity is living along the coastlines. So we are talking about an absolutely staggering human loss of life. And how it all plays out is it's impossible for someone to say exactly when something is going to happen, because there's not enough, as we point out in the video, there's not enough computer power on the surface of the planet. If you could network all of the computers that we have together to crunch this, because you have so many objects and so many interplays that are going on. So it's a real rat's nest of calculations to figure it out. Not that I don't think the government isn't going, going real hard at it with this new generation of fluidic computers that they have. And I think they are trying to figure out what's going to happen. You know, for them, they've built this massive network of underground bunkers. And what they're finding is that their plan A isn't as good as they thought it was going to be. And they're worried about it, and they're worried about what the survivability of their bunker systems are going to be. If you look at the top 2% wealthiest people in the country, virtually every one of them has either made arrangements to be into these taxpayer-built facilities underground, or they've already got their own bunkers.
Sure, that's right. And they've kept pretty quiet about it, though.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, they got their Bush tax cut, and they used it. And these things, I mean, I talk to the people who provide services for them, entry level, I'm talking bare bones, is $500,000. We're talking about deep underground luxury condominiums, fully self-contained, air, water, waste, fuel, a couple of years of supplies of food. I mean, you know, while everyone on the surface is going to be agonizing, they're going to be down there watching flat screen television, you know, in the jacuzzi.
I'll stay on the air, Marshall, until the very last moment.
All right. I love it.
Let's go to Scott in Sarasota, Florida. Scott, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Had a question for Marshall. I run the Astronomy Live YouTube channel. I do live webcasts, and I do orbital analysis. And I did some orbital analysis of your images from April 23rd of last year, where you showed this Planet X object on the Toralba webcam. And I want to go back real quick to what the first caller at the top of the hour said and you responded something along the lines of this thing's constantly changing its velocity. I thought that was interesting because I was able to get I was able to actually calculate the orbit of this thing and actually derive the orbital elements, but it changed depending on the beginning of time that I looked at. If I looked at it for a few minutes, I could get an orbit. If I looked at it over a longer period of time, I couldn't get an orbit. But if you looked at it for just if you only looked at a few minutes of time at any given time, you could come up with an orbit that would describe that motion. But it turned out that all the orbits I had calculated for it, they actually ended up indicating that this is actually in Earth orbit. So I highly encourage everyone to go check out that video and see for themselves. And I post all the calculations there, and anyone can check it out and feel free to critique it for me. But it turned out that the results of the calculations yielded in Earth orbit, not anything in deep space or beyond Jupiter or anything like that.
Okay, very good. Good calculations. We need as many as we can get, Marshall.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen it, so I can't comment.
Let's go to Mike in Ontario, Canada. Hey, Michael, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
Hey, how are you doing?
Okay.
Hey, let me just turn my speakerphone off. Hang on.
Okay, let's do that, and then I get you right back on.
Because is that better?
Yep.
Okay, here we are. I was thinking about the way the universe spirals and what he was saying, the way that we're going through spirally around through the universe, our whole everything. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So we really don't know what's going on. So I think Marshall could be right about that. And I'm my uncle's a neurosurgeon. I got a scientific mind. I've got a mechanical mind. I used to grow tobacco. I can pretty much fix anything. You know what I mean? You got something wrong, bring me over. I'll fix it for you.
Anything. Engines, you
know,
you name it.
Yeah.
Boy, you know, you're going to be someone to know.
I love your music, eh? I'm a musician, too. I like your, you played the Psychedelic Furs earlier.
We play just about everything here, that's for sure. Go ahead, Marshall. What were you saying?
Actually, you know, a guy like him is going to be, for survival communities, he's going to be really useful. I mean, you
can't pay him any money under a survival thing. Nobody would have anything.
Well,
so what are you going to do, barter?
No, you know, people are just going to, they're going to come together and they're going to survive. Life as we know it, I mean, economic systems are going to collapse. People are just going to come together in communities, in, you know, we spent the vast majority of human history without a monetary system. You know, we were organized into clans and into groups, and we'll do that again. And it's somebody that can walk into a survival community and say, man, you know, I can make electricity out of junk, or, you know, I'm a gunsmith, or I know how to grow stuff indoors, or I know all about alternative medicine. These are the kind of job skills that are going to be in demand in these communities. If somebody walks in and says, I'm a tax lawyer, it's like, you know, take it down the road. Thank you.
I think we're going to go the route of the shelter in the Twilight Zone. People will storm other houses and will do whatever they need to do to survive.
Well, they're going to...
Not good.
We're going to see that, but the ones who are really going to survive, you know the term, the meek inherit the earth.
Yes.
If you actually go, you do an etymology dictionary, you go to the 12th century root definition of meek. The definition we have today is a disinformation. The original 12th century, you look at that, and we've studied it. It is the profile, perfect profile of a survival community where people are in service to each other. They're in service to others. It is a model for the ones that will be able to endure over the longest period of time. So the ones that are into, you know, going to go the Mad Max route, you know, two men in or one man leave kind of logic.
Well, I just had Terry Hayes on last week. He's the one who wrote that line.
Brilliant line. I love that movie. You know, I've only seen it 100 times. But these are not the people that are going to have the endurance. We're looking at something that's going to be a 10-year event. And it's really going to be a real hard test of those who make it. And, you know, like the ones that have built all the bunkers, we call them bunker bunnies because they're going to come up after a couple of years when their supplies are exhausted. They're not going to understand what life is on the surface. They're going to smell different. They're going to walk different. They're going to be different. And predators, you know, are going to be, they're going to be looking for the bunker bunnies. It's not going to work out as well for them. The ones that are really going to make it are the ones that are going to be resolved to do it now and to be resourceful and to be inventive.
And to be quiet about it.
Yeah, sure.
I don't think you should be telling your entire neighborhood what you're doing.
That's right. Mum's the word. Loose lips sink ships.
You got that right. Marshall, almost out of time. Where can people see the Planet 101?
PlanetX101.com. That'll take you to all of the videos. It'll take you to my site, YOWUSA.com. But just go to PlanetX101.com.
All right, my friend. You take care of yourself, and we will chat later, all right?
Okay.
Marshall Masters, as he talks about Planet X. Hey, there could be something out there. I mean, there's no doubt about it. The question is, do the mainstream astronomers know about it, and they're just quiet about it? Or have they not found it? Who knows? Don't forget, on our next Coast to Coast program, it'll be those Friday night and the Saturday morning open lines, plus we're going to take a little ride on the paranormal side. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.